Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're starting the last Anucheda, 63. Naimittika prakritiko nitya atyantiko layaha samsteti kavibik proktash chaturdasya swabhavataha asya parameshvarasya swabhavataha shaktitaha Atyantika ityanena muktir apyatra praveshita. I may have read this already, but let's read it. There are four types of cosmic annihilation. This is continuing discussion of the topics of the Bhagavatam according to the 12th canto. There are four types of cosmic annihilation: occasional, elemental, continuous, and ultimate. All brought into effect by the inherent potency of the Supreme Lord, learned scholars have called this topic dissolution. Then gloss on this. Of him, asya means of the Supreme Lord. Okay. And by his nature means by his energy. We don't talk about the Lord having a conditioned nature. He has his eternal energy. That's his swabhava. Swabhava. The word ultimate implies that included here is the topic liberation. Yeah, atyantika is a particular kind of annihilation, but it's the same as liberation. Okay, we read that, and also we were looking at the long passage in the Sarasamvadini that quotes the Vishnu Dharmotra about there being an annihilation also at the end of every manvantara. Did we finish that? Or would we stop in the middle of it? Yes. What? Okay. Now let's go back to the middle of it. I have to back up to find it. File 14. I know it's in file 14. I got to find the exact spot. Shesham Vinashati Jagat. Is that where I should start?
That's what we read yesterday.
We read all of that. And the translation of it?
Yeah.
Okay, did I read the commentary on it? No. It's got four verses quoted in it from the third canto. Yeah, we read that. Okay, now the quotes, the four verses from the third canto are not describing the same yes, they're describing the manvantara at the end of Brahma's day. And the passage where we were reading from the Vishnu Dharmotara Purana is describing the annihilation at the end of a manvantara. So we continue. Evam sarva manvantareshu samhara ityadi prakaranam Sri Hari Vamshe tadiya tikasu chaspashtameva. Likewise, as in the Vishnu Dharmotara, this annihilation is explicitly affirmed by the section of Sri Hari Vamsha that describes the annihilation occurring in each manvantara and in the commentaries on the Hari Vamsha. There are some commentaries on the Hari Vamsha. I'm sorry, Domino, could you get me some water? Okay. And so also, Srimad Bhagavatam tells of devastations at the end of the fifth and sixth manvantaras. Okay. Vishnu Dharmotara is telling about it, about annihilation at the end of a manvantara. Sri Harivamsa also does, although we don't get the actual quotes from it. And we can look in Srimad Bhagavatam and see description of, I know about the devastation at the end of the sixth manvantara. That's in chapter 24, the last chapter of the eighth canto, Matsya Leela. What about the end of the fifth manvantara? At the end of the fifth manvantara? Where is that described? So I know something about, isn't the fifth manvantara Avatar Vaikuntha, who made a Vaikuntha planet better than Swargaloka? And I think Lord Vaikuntha destroyed the universe just in his fighting with Indra. That's part of his pastime. I don't know if that's what we're talking about. You don't know exactly where to look. Okay. All right. Devastation at the end of the fifth manvantara described in Srimad Bhagavatam. If someone could find it for us, then we could clarify it. All right. I think here we go. I think here's the answer. There is a passage beginning, and it begins. The numbers are funny. Wait. Chakrushe 120 Prapti. Yeah, which is Bhagavatam 430, 49. Could you look that up and find out what's happening there? 430, 49. That's our place. And the verse is here, but let's see what the context is. Anyway, the verse says, there is a passage beginning, this is verse 430, 49. His previous body had been destroyed, but he, the same Daksha, inspired by this supreme will, created all the desired living entities in the Chakshusha Manvantara. Well, okay, that is all described in the sixth canto. There's a big interlude in the fifth canto for describing the contents of the universe. But the history is sort of interrupted for the fifth canto. At the very end of the fourth canto, we're told that Daksha is going to take birth again at the beginning of the Chakshusha sixth manvantara. And there's some mention of an annihilation at the end of the fifth one there. This verse doesn't say that. Does anything in that context around that verse say it? And also there's statement about the annihilation at the end of the sixth manvantara. When there was a complete inundation after the period of Chakshusha Manu, the Lord accepted the form of a fish and protected Vaivasvata Manu, keeping him up on a boat. That is 8:24:33. And that's explicit. It says there's an annihilation at the end of the Chakshusha Manvantara. Okay. I'm sure out on Sankirtan, this information will be very useful in your preaching. People are going to ask you all about this. Yeah, whether there really is annihilation at the end of every Manvantara. Anyway, you know it now. And a commentary. The reign of Chakshusha Manu is the sixth manvantara, and that of Vaivasvata Manu is the seventh. Okay. And then the Sarvasambhavani says something else to back it up. Tatacha Bharata Tatparye Sri Madhvacharya. Manvantara Pralaye Matsyarupo Vidyam Adan Manave Deva Devaha. That the verse number is 343 in the Mahabharata Tatparya Nirnaya, which says, similarly, Sri Madhvacharya says in his Bharata Tatparya. Bharata Tatparya is just the short name for the Mahabharata Tatparya, the purport of the Mahabharata. That's Madhva's explanation, not every single verse, but verses he chooses to explain. And he says, during the annihilation of the Manvantara, the Lord of Lords took the form of a fish and gave mystic knowledge to Manu. Well, okay, there's the annihilation at the end of the Manvantara, corroborated by Madhvacharya. Then, Dvadashe Shaunakavakye Sava Asmat Kulotpanna Kalpe Smin Bhargavot Tamaha Naivaduna Bibhutanam Samplavakko Pijayate Ityatra Tadavi Swikaras Tu Kalpanta Pralaya Vishaya Eva Yena Grastam Idam Jagat Ityuktatvat Manvantara Pralaye Bhavi Manvadinam Apistitesh Cha. Okay. In the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there are these words of Shaunaka. This same Markandeya Rishi, the foremost descendant of Bhrigu, took birth in my own family during the current day of Brahma, and during this time, no dissolution of the created beings occurs. Wow. So now Shaunaka is saying there's no dissolution in the middle of the current day of Brahma. Does that knock down everything, our whole argument? Jiva Goswami says, here the reluctance to accept an annihilation at the end of a manvantara pertains to the kind of annihilation that occurs at the end of Brahma's day. Okay, there may be some annihilation, but not the same kind as occurs at the end of Brahma's day. This is indicated by the words by which this whole universe is devoured. Less than the whole universe is devoured during the smaller annihilation at the end of a manvantara. Okay, so the qualification is there. And also by the fact that during an annihilation at the end of a manvantara, the future Manu and others remain alive, but it looks like nobody remained alive. Nobody remained alive in what's going to be described now. What happened to Markandeya in the 12th canto? Nobody else remained alive. And we're going to have to be given an explanation what's going on. There isn't supposed to be such a complete annihilation in the middle of a day of Brahma. But it looks like Markandeya experienced one, and he was the only one left alive. Okay. Let's see what we find. This is a little bit of mystery, a little bit of dramatic tension, at least philosophical dramatic tension for the end of our Sandarbha. Shashte tu pralayo anyasman manvantarad vilakshana. Trilokasyaiva majanat. Tata chashtame Sri Matsyadevain oktam. Trilokyam liyamanayam samvart ambasivai tada upastasyati naukachit vishala twam mayerita iti. Hear the reluctance. I read that paragraph.
It's repeated twice.
The paragraph is repeated twice. I see it three times.
slightly,
horrible. I don't know what they were supposed to do with that. Okay, that's it. Okay. No, no, it doesn't work like that. Okay, why repeat it three times? Good question. We can't get away with that. We have to follow the original text.
It's just the way you made sentences that are different. I don't know if you prefer one to the other.
Well, yeah, but I have to trace the history. Which one is the one we're supposed to keep? I had to find out. Probably the last one, but why three copies of the translation? Let's read the last one and see if it sounds good. Okay? Looks like they're similar. Here, the reluctance to accept an annihilation pertains only to the kind of annihilation that occurs at the end of a Brahma's day. For such an annihilation, is there a comma? Yeah. For such an annihilation is marked by the words by which this whole universe is devoured. We already read that. And during an annihilation, at the end of a manvantara, the future manus and others remain alive. Well, that sounds good. I'll just see why the other two are still there. Okay, then the last paragraph. But the annihilation of the sixth manvantara, in contrast to the others, immerses the three worlds. Thus Sri Matsyadev says in the eighth canto, when all the three worlds merge into the water of dissolution, a large boat sent by me will appear before you. Okay, that's Matsyadev talking. And he's talking about water of annihilation, and it just talks about the three worlds being annihilated. Okay, so there's a distinction. It's a lesser kind of annihilation. Commentary. The future manus, sages, and demigods survive the annihilation at the end of a manvantara. But at the end of Brahma's day, of the universe give up their bodies and repose in Brahma's body during his night. Markandeya, however, is different. I'm going to read that in a second, but I have a question first. That correction we just found that has to be made, get rid of two extra paragraphs. Why would that be pleasing to the publisher, Brahma Mahurta Prabhu? Making such corrections, especially making them a number of times in different places. Of course, it's a correction, but what else? We want to get everything right, but what else does it do? Yeah, it reduces the amount of paper it has to be used and how much money it will cost to print it. That's always a factor in publishing books. The paper costs money. The ink costs money. So you don't waste paper and ink more than you have to. When you're printing 1,000, 3,000 copies, it adds up. Okay. And it's not getting cheaper year after year. Okay, Markandeya, however, is different. Ahus chirayusham rishim mrikandu tanayam janaha yakalpante yurvarito yena grastamidam jagat. Authorities say that Markandeya Rishi, the son of Mrikandu, is an exceptionally long-lived sage who was the only survivor at the end of Brahma's day, when the entire universe was merged in the flood of annihilation. Okay, it says there in our translation at least, it says kalpa. So apparently what Markandeya witnessed was anyway at the end of Brahma's day, not in the middle. But he witnessed a total annihilation where everybody was killed and he was left alive. According to the Vishnu Dharmotara, in a manvantara pralaya, the destruction at the end of a manvantara, Bhur Loka and everything on it are destroyed, and the goddess of the earth becomes a boat. carrying the seeds of the forms of life that lived on her. In the pralaya, at the end of the sixth manvantara, however, when Matsyadeva appeared, all the three worlds, Boar, Buvar, and Swar, were annihilated. Okay, then. Okay, in general then, it sounds like we're hearing that in general, a manvantara annihilation at the end of a manvantara doesn't necessarily involve so much destruction as the whole three worlds, Boar, Bavar, Swar, leaving only the higher planets. But sometimes it's just the earth that's destroyed. Yeah? According to the Vishnu Dharmotara, Boar Loka and everything on it are destroyed. In general. Okay. Continuing with this. Everything you want to know about annihilations at the end of manvantaras. Etada pekshayaiva tatra shri shukenapi. When is one coming up? How much time to the end of the manvantara? How much more time for us till the end of the manvantara? 28th what? 28th? Divya Yuga. How many Divya Yugas are there? 71? 1,000, yeah. No. A Divya Yuga is 1,000 Yugas. So yeah, 71 and a quarter of those Divya Yugas. Well, it's less than halfway through. So that means we got at least 150 million, 160, 70 million years to go before we have to witness this. But still, good to know about and to avoid. Okay, continuing. 72. Etat apekshayaiva tatra shri shukenapi yosav asmin mahakalpe ityuktam kalpashabdasya pralaya matra vachitvat mahatshabdasya manvantarantara pralaya apekshatvat. Okay, now, with this in mind, Sri Shuka also speaks of that son of Manu in this great kalpa. Son of Manu is not there in those words, but it's somewhere else in the verse. Anyway, Mahakalpa word is there. The word kalpa here indicates any annihilation, and the word great, Mahakalpa, contrasting this one with those at the end of other manvantaras. Yeah, that was... I think we're talking about... 747, where's the... Let me find the bottom here. That's... Oh, it's vibrant... Chakshush. No, we're talking about the seventh, between the sixth and the seventh now. Yeah, but that's Vaivasvata Manu. His father's also Manu? His father's Chakshush? No, his father's Vivaswan. This might be a mistake. Because this is a quote from the last chapter of the eighth canto. It's talking about, I think, let's go back and see the verse. That's not son of, that's a son of Vivaswan, not of Manu. Okay, mark it. Okay, mistake. No, son of Vivaswan, sun god. The sun god. Son of the sun god. Okay. All right. With this in mind, Sri Shuka also speaks of that son of Vivaswan in this great kalpa. Now, what it means is what there's one annihilation that happened at the end of the sixth and at the end of the fifth manvantara. Now another one is happening, but it's called Mahakalpa because it's a more drastic devastation. That's all. Here indicating... And the word great, contrasting this with those at the end of other manvantaras. We're not talking about longer kalpas, we're just talking about a more drastic annihilation going on. The Amarakosha lists as synonyms these words, samvarta, pralaya, kalpa, kshaya, and the end of a kalpa. Kalbanta. They're all synonymous. Mahakalpa. Okay, so here we have the word mahakalpa. If the word kalpa means a day of Brahma, then it's a, you know, month of Brahma or something, or half of his life. Right? Or mahakalpa is a real day of Brahma and an ordinary kalpa is something less than his day. There are different lengths of time. If we mean kalpa to mean that length of time, which is Brahma's day. But kalpa, according to Amarakosha, also can mean just the time at the end of a kalpa. And this is a big, this is a important end of a kalpa with a drastic annihilation of all three worlds and not just the earth, the earth system. So it's a big time of destruction at the end of the kalpa is what mahakalpa means. And it's, okay, that's supported by the definition given of multiple meanings of the same word given in the Amarakosha. Kalpa can mean the same as kalpa anta. Yeah, but what happens at the end of a kalpa? A pralaya. It's the time of annihilation. So when we're talking, we're not talking about a long kalpa. We're talking about a significant end of a kalpa. And really, kalpa there means manvantara. Yeah, so kalpa can mean manvantara, and then you could call the real day of Brahma a mahakalpa. But here, mahakalpa means the end of a manvantara, but a special one. Amarakosha was written by a Buddhist. But here, Jiva Goswami and most other acharyas quote him as authority. He's standard. He wrote a good dictionary, so it's used. Very concise. It only has few thousand entries, but it covers almost everything important. You can memorize it. Young students are made to memorize it, even just after they study grammar. I'm not saying we're going to do it, but I think we have enough to do. But it is traditional to study Amarakosha sometimes right after finishing grammar study, or even before you finish it. Memorize it. Yes.
In 2046, it says that Mahakalpa is the exhaling and inhaling of Vishnu.
Where?
2046.
Oh, that's okay. It definitely can mean that. Just in this special context, it has a different meaning, and the dictionary says it can have more than one meaning. It just, you know, according to the context of the story, it should mean that. It should mean not the end of Brahma's day, because the story is not about that. It's about something happening at the end of the six-month mantra. That's explicit. So the word has to be understood in the other meaning to fit the story. Okay, then we continue from there. The Sanskrit. Atas trilokya Majana hetor eva dainandina pralayavad brahmapi tada satyuga samana kale pralaye shri narayana nabi kamale vishramyati yata eva tatra vishramana samyat yavad brahmi nisha iti nisha shabda prayukta tatra cha trilokya Majanepi keshanchit deva suradinam asamapta boganam stitis tam navam alam yaiva yaruktam srimatya devenaiva satyavratam prati tvam tavadoshadik sarva bijan yuccha vachanicha saptarshibik parivrita sarva sattva paprimhitaha iti. Therefore, because at that time, which is equal to Satya Yuga, the three worlds are immersed, Brahma also takes rest inside the lotus navel of Sri Narayan. Just as at the annihilation of at the end of each of his days. It's not really the end of his day, but because the three worlds are getting immersed, so Satyaloka is not destroyed, but Brahma goes ahead and goes into the lotus navel of Sri Narayan. And because of his taking rest there, in the statement, the words say, Brahmi Nisha, as long as the night of Brahma lasted. Well, wait a minute, this is not the end of Brahma's day. Why are we talking about night of Brahma? Because he went to sleep, he took a nap. Okay. The word night is used, but it just means, you know, even if it wasn't really night, he went to sleep. Okay. Even while the three worlds were immersed, some demigods and demons who had not finished their material enjoyment stayed alive. So the three worlds includes, the seven Patalas also. Anyway, demons and demigods should have all been killed. Their worlds were destroyed. But some of them stayed alive because they hadn't yet finished their material enjoyment. For they took shelter of the boat. Of course, that's not in itself an excuse for getting saved when it's time for your world to be destroyed, that I'm sorry, I haven't finished my material enjoyment. You know, you're told, okay, we'll kill you anyway. You can sleep in Mahavishnu for billions of years and we'll see about it later. But these demons and demigods managed to get on the boat. And that's stated by Sri Matsyadev himself to Satyavrata. Then you should collect all the herbs and seeds, both superior and inferior, and take with you the seven sages and all kinds of living entities. Does that sound like any other book, you know? Okay, so there's this, you know, Middle Asian tradition of the big flood. It sounds like it's a reflection of what actually happened. It's also found in the Gilgamesh, you know, epic of Mesopotamia and other legends of the region, not just in the Hebrew Bible. Maybe the mountain that Noah's Ark was supposed to rest on. Maybe it's actually there. Maybe it's actually one of these real places. But no, but Satyavrata's boat rested on Mount Meru, right? Came docked on Mount Meru, I think. Armenia. Well, no, some others say it's in Saudi Arabia. Okay, I don't think Mount Meru is either in Armenia or in Saudi Arabia. Motor?
Yeah. It said tying the boat to peak of the Himalayas.
Peak of the Himalayas, okay, which is not, Himalayas don't extend to Armenia.
The Supreme Lord Mahasaya, the Master of the Universe, then becomes invisible, and the creatures who were on the boat find themselves standing on the peak.
Yeah, it doesn't say which peak. There, well, that's the Vishnu Dharmamurti, but I think the eighth canto is more specific. Anyway. Okay, maybe it doesn't say. But anyway, the biblical version of it is not exactly the same, but it's obviously derivative from the Puranic history. And they can say that we borrowed it from them, but you know, our history happened a lot long before theirs. Commentary. According to the standard dictionary of Amarasimha, Kalpa can mean either day of Brahma or annihilation. Okay, I have a question. I'm wondering why Kalpa is not in italics. There's certain words that, you know, like mantra, which we're going to not put in italics anymore. But culpa? Is culpa an English word? No. Okay. Let me just put it in italics. Let me check if it's in italics everywhere else. All right. Moving on. There's not. We're not done with this yet. 73. Tasmat siddhi manvantara pralaye tasyapi naimittikatvat chatushtaya anativiktatvam. Okay, is this a fifth kind of annihilation? This, you know, minor annihilation at the end of a manvantara? No. It's thus having been proved that annihilation takes place at the end of a manvantara, we still have no more than four kinds of annihilation, because the one at the end of a manvantara is also within the category of an occasional annihilation. Naimitika, on a special occasion, like someone's birthday. But this is a special occasion, the end of a manvantara, or the end of Brahma's day. And the prakriti laya, the wiping out of the complete, you know, universe, that's one time at the end of Brahma's life. Once and for all, annihilation of the whole universe. We are taught about that in the Bhagavatam to teach us not to be too interested in the material world. To help teach renunciation, detachment, because that is essential for the development of attraction to Krishna. If you're still attracted to to material life and you think you can go on with it and keep on enjoying, then you're going to be negligent about becoming interested in Krishna. Therefore, renunciation is required and helpful. And you can read about all the bad things that happen in the material world. And the fact that it's all destroyed sooner or later is also one of the bad things. Even if you get everything else right, adjust everything, stay in the mode of goodness, you're a great sage, you can live to the end of the manvantara, okay, then you have to die along with everybody else. Everybody else on the earth. Okay. Continuing, I read one sentence more. Anyopyakasmat pralayakshriyate. Yata swayambhuva manvantara srishtarambe. Yata cha shastra manvantara madye. Prachetasa daksha dauhitra hiranyaksha vade. Jai shikranitai. Okay, I read that sentence. We also hear of other exceptional annihilations. As at the beginning of the creation in the manvantara of Swayambhuva and in the middle of the sixth manvantara during the killing of Hiranyaksha, the grandson of Daksha, when Daksha had become the son of the Prachetas. That means Daksha took his second birth as the son of the Prachetas in the sixth manvantara. And after that, there was a partial annihilation after Hiranyaksha got killed in the middle of the manvantara. Ubayor aikena katanam tu tritiye lila sajatyena ivagyayam yata padma brahma kalpayo kwachit kwachit sankaryam tadvat. We should understand that the narration in the third canto of both of these annihilations, as if they were one, is due to the similarity of the pastimes. Described in the same way that the Padma and Brahma kalpas are sometimes mixed. Okay, maybe we get confusion from that. There are sometimes description of the two different days of Brahma mixed up, and then we get confused about whether they're really different days. The Padma Kalpa and the Brahma Kalpa. It's just that because the pastimes are so similar, it's just economic to describe everything all together. Therefore, okay, going back to the Sanskrit, tasmat nirodho syanu shayanam atmanak sahashakti bihi. Which canto is that from? Second or 12th? Second. That's going back to the earlier list. It yeta lakshanam apyupa lakshanam eva. Nityapralaye pi tadavyapte. Okay. We may complain that in Shukadeva, in the latter list given by Shukadeva, by Sutta Goswami, in the 12th canto, there are some topics merged together and something seems to be missing. But in the previous list, in the definition of Nirodha, annihilation, the definition is incomplete, technically speaking. Therefore, annihilation is the merging of the living entity along with his conditioned living tendency with the mystic lying down of Mahavishnu. Well, that's a great definition of the Prakriti, the total annihilation of the universe. But what about the other ones? So it's an upalakshanam. You refer to a partial reference serves the purpose of that would be served by saying everything. This is annihilation, and also there's a couple of other kinds of annihilation. This is a definition that gives only a partial indication, because it does not even deal with constant annihilation, what's going on every minute. Okay, but you read the whole Bhagavatam, read all the chapters, and you get all the information. You can put it together for yourself. Okay, Prabhupada's picking out Atyantika as his idea of annihilation. Okay. Yeah. Partial and selective representation. And Prabhupada sometimes in his bhava would selectively translate things that are maybe someone could question technically. Like Lord Vishnu appears, you know, on Garuda with 4 or 8 arms. And he's accompanied by his eternal associates. One of them is Nanda and Sunanda. And Prabhupada translates it as Nanda Maharaj. Because Prabhupada is just, you know. Maybe is Nanda in Vaikuntha expansion of Nanda Maharaj? Anyway, Prabhupada is, you know, he's in another consciousness. Okay. We have a commentary. When Swayambhuva Manu was born from Brahma and was ready to take up his duty. I mean, we saw that when we got the manuscript and we were editing it, and we just Jayadwaita Maharaj decided, and I think Prabhupada was even in New York at that time. It was decided, we're not going to change this. You know, that's Prabhupada's ecstasy, it's what he decided to say, leave it. You know, we could have even written to Prabhupada, or he may have been there, and Prabhupada chose to translate like that. Let him translate it like that. Commentary. When Swayambhuva Manu was born from Brahma and was ready to take up his duty of guiding the human race, he saw that the earth, home of human beings, was submerged in the huge ocean at the bottom of the universe. Okay, now we're going back to the middle of the third canto. And Swayambhuva Manu was ordered by Brahma to start working, start developing the human race, and he found out while the planet they're supposed to live on is submerged at the bottom of the universe. He, Swayambhuva Manu, then prayed to Lord Brahma. Yadokak sarvabhutanam mahi magna mahambasi asyudarane yut Yatno asya udarane yatno deva devya vidyatam. O master of the demigods. Lost the place. O master of the demigods, please attempt to lift the earth, which is merged in the great water, because it is the dwelling place for all the living entities. It can be done by your endeavor and by the mercy of the Lord. This immersion of the earth was actually a special kind of pralaya. Soon after it occurred, Lord Varaha fought with Hiranyaksha, and at one point the demon resorted to asura magic, conjuring up an illusion that evoked fear of universal annihilation. Oh, now we're talking about Hiranyaksha making an annihilation. Okay. Ato dudashri janmayam yogamayeshvare harau yam vilokya prajastrasta menide syopa samyamam. The demon employed many conjuring tricks against the personality of Godhead, the Lord of Yogamaya. At the sight of this, the people were filled with alarm and thought the dissolution of the universe near. Pravavur vayavas chondas tamak pamsavam airayan digbyo nipetur gravana kshepanaik prahita iva. Fierce winds began to blow from all directions, spreading darkness occasioned by dust and hailstorms. Stones came in volleys from every corner, as if thrown by machine guns. Diao nashta bagana bra gao gai savidyut stanayit nubihi varshad bi puya kesha srig vimutrastini chasakrit. The luminaries in outer space disappeared because the sky was overcast with masses of clouds. Accompanied by lightning and thunder, the sky rained pus, hair, blood, stool, urine, and bones. So apparently Hiranyaksha really conjured something up. It wasn't just a hologram. Lord Vishnu is not so easily tricked by just an optical illusion. We talk here about during the killing. Well, okay, during the battle that led up to the killing. Is that okay? During the killing? He's going to get killed soon. And then last statement, constant annihilation is the normal decay of all things, living and non-living. Okay? Which you should be familiar with. Okay. And that's all we have for Sarvasamvadini for 63.1. When we get to 63.5, there's something more. We'll get to that tomorrow. So I think that's enough for today. Jiva Goswami wants to clarify for us the different categories of annihilation. Anyway, it's the end of the Sandarbha. No harm in digressing a little bit. So please come forward with questions. Just if you don't want to send it by email, write it down and drop it on my desk, and we'll have class on Sunday and finish this Sandarbha. Really? Let me see. Do you send it to the conference? November. I have November 7th. I haven't received anything in this conference since November 7th. There's maybe something wrong going on. Can you resend them to me? Resend them to me. Resend them to both the conference and me personally and see what happens. Okay. All those questions that are unanswered. Can you drag, trace them all out and send them to me in both ways? Okay. But I have the conference, but in it I only have some old questions. November 20th. Oh, here's one. This is from Damodar Gopal. Okay, can we answer it on Sunday? Okay. Sure.
There's no class
Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, are we supposed to have class tomorrow? I don't think we have to. Okay. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Sri Jiva Goswami Ki Jai.